Well, we've got a great show coming up today. We're joined by chartered financial analyst Matt Hyman, director of asset management at Creative One Wealth. We're here to talk investing, trends in the market today, like interest rates and investing strategies, and much more. It's going to be a great conversation. So let's get started. Welcome in to Riverbank Riches, Navigating Financial Wisdom. I'm Ben George with Desmond Taylor, as always. Desmond, welcome in. I know we got a good show today. We've had a couple of guests on the podcast in the past, but I'm really excited about the conversation today and getting into investing. So kind of set the stage on who you have today for us and why you chose to bring Matt on.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about today's conversation. Matt here has a wealth of knowledge. A lot of our, we frequently use him as a resource, his team as a resource here. So our existing clients have kind of access through us to him. And I wanted to bring him on and let, you know, some of the listeners get some of the value that Matt brings and get it kind of an inside tap into what he has to offer and his knowledge. So extremely excited about today's podcast. Matt has his credentials. He was worked with the Federal Reserve in Kansas. He was a chief investment officer at, where was it at, Matt?
It's Loggia Portfolio Management here in Kansas City.
Yeah. So again, you know, he's a kind of a younger face, like I am, but he's, you know, don't let that fool you. He comes with just such great experience and knowledge. So, you know, Matt, one of the questions that I had is, you know, you coming from a central bank background and actually working with one of the central banks of in Kansas City there, is, you know, how do the central banks use these interest rate tools kind of to control inflation? And what are the potential side effects of these policies, you know, seeing that firsthand and then, you know, being outside perspective, kind of where you are positioned now, where it's helping clients and managing portfolios. How does that work? How does the central bank, you know, adjust different rates and policies and even what they say, right? You get Powell up there and what he says just moves the markets. Yeah. So from your experience, kind of elaborate on this.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks for having me. First of all, happy to be here. You know, the Fed's in the news a lot lately. So they get a lot of headlines, particularly with respect to interest rates. So the primary mechanism they're talking about here when they're raising and lowering interest rates, it's called the federal funds rate. And specifically, that's the rate that banks would lend excess reserves to each other overnight. So an extremely short term, typically 24-hour borrowing period, what would that lending rate be? So what a lot of people don't realize is the Fed's policy actually changed as a result of 2008. So pre-2008, all of us know about the financial crisis that occurred. A lot of regulations came out of that updated the way that we do things. Prior to that 2008 crash, the banks actually set interest rates amongst each other. They would determine how much it would cost to lend or borrow money to another creditworthy bank. And that's the pricing mechanism for interest rates. But post-2008 was really the first time we saw the Fed come in and they started to pull that lever. And they did so by expanding their balance sheet and all of the regulations that came out of that crisis. So now what the Fed is doing, they have a subcommittee called the Federal Open Market Committee that meets periodically and they determine where to set rates. And when they talk about rates, they're talking about short-term rates. So think of like 30 to 90 days short-term interest rates. And what they're trying to do when they raise rates, at its core, they're trying to slow economic growth. So what they're doing is they're raising interest rates, and that has a trickle-down effect to a lot of different areas in the market. Think of mortgage rates, for example. The Fed is the baseline rate, and then everything prices off of that rate that the Fed sets. So mortgage rates, car rates, anything that you're using to determine an interest rate on debt. So when the Fed raises that, it makes borrowing money more cost prohibitive. It makes banks not lend as much. And through that mechanism, they're slowing economic growth. And they do so to combat primarily two things. They want to combat inflation and they want to combat employment. So those are the two mandates that the Fed is constantly trying to meet, stable inflation and full employment. So they raise rates to slow down the economy, which is to combat the inflation. And then when the economy starts to slow, they cut rates to re-stimulate it. So it's the inverse effect. Borrowing rates become cheaper, banks can lend more, people are borrowing, they're spending, and that's really the mechanism that's causing all of these shifts. And it has a lot of trickle-down effects, because when the Fed sets a base rate, like I said, that prices everything from mortgage rates to bonds. Everything that has an interest rate tied to it is really starting from that Fed's preset number.
You know, this is obviously a powerful tool that they have. But, you know, going back on the kind of the history of interest rates, we saw this happen with Volcker, was kind of the last one to be this aggressive. And it seems to have worked out so far for Powell. So, you know, is this something that we could see going forward, is these aggressive interest rates? And then one of the things too that you just mentioned is, you know, in 2008, and this was kind of, you know, eye-opening, they changed that, right? So you're saying that the banks actually set these interest rates, and now the Fed has stepped in and saying that we're now setting these interest rates.
Yeah.
So exactly. Is that, would you akin that to why the exponential growth has happened since 2008? Because if you just look at the market as a whole and look at the growth that's happened from 2008 until about 2020, it's just, you know, no time in history to even look back and see that much. It's the longest bull run in history, right? So yeah. Is that something, would you akin that to almost us coming off the gold standard? You know, as soon as that happened, it opened up a lot of, you know, regardless of, you know, everybody has their own opinion on that or not. But when they came off the gold standard, it kind of opened the economy up to even more growth. And is this something similar, you know, going forward? How, because it's only been 10 years or, you know, 15, 16 years since that's happened.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we're in an interesting time right now, because this is the first time in history that we held interest rates as low as we did post 2008 financial crisis for as long as we did. So a lot of this is still kind of an ongoing case study for the Fed. They don't have as much historical data to look back and rely on with respect to what are the long-term effects of the policy that they've implemented. This is the first time they've done that. But to your point about the bull market, when the Fed kept interest rates artificially low for as long as they did, that really helped to fuel investors into what they call riskier assets, because the low risk assets, like, I mean, think all the way back to your checking and savings accounts. You know, since 2008, we've all become accustomed to earning $0 on our checking and savings. You know, back in the 1980s and 70s, yeah, mortgage rates were high, but they could also get 18% on a bank CD. You know, everything is relative. So by holding interest rates as low and as long as they did, it kind of pushed people out of the safe investments like bank CDs, checking savings account, and even fixed income to a certain extent as well. To have an average return, they had to move into riskier assets like equity markets. So it certainly had a significant impact on fueling the bull market that we had. And you mentioned Volcker and the Fed's interest rates relative to him. I mean, they're really looking back to his actual case study right now and determining how we can land the plane, so to say, in the current economy. So what happened back then was they cut rates too fast and didn't let inflation come all the way down. They got a little bit ahead of themselves and inflation reignited, and they don't want to make that same mistake again. So the Fed are historians. They raised rates fast in part because they got the inflation story wrong to begin with. Back in 2022, they were talking about inflation as transitory. You know, it's just a result of the COVID supply chain shocks and shutting down the economy. We have an inflation shock, but it's going to come back down. That was the narrative, and so they didn't act quick enough. Now, with the benefit of hindsight, we can see that that was not the case. And so the Fed had to hike more aggressively than they otherwise would have liked to, just to make up for getting that prediction wrong. So I think the Fed is going to want to stay where they are and be a little bit more cautious based on the tales from history to make sure they really nip inflation in the bud before they cut too soon and cause an even worse problem, which is stagflation, where you have slow economic growth and high inflation. That's absolutely the Fed's least favorite scenario that they could incite.
And that's something we saw in Japan, right? You know, they had stagflation for the past, what seems like 30 years, and their economy just now seems to be picking up. But
They just got interest rates into positive territory for the first time in a very long time.
You know, negative interest rates. You hear a lot about negative interest rates. There was even talk about it during COVID. Just kind of briefly. I know some other countries have experimented with it. And the reason I asked is because, you know, typically interest rates, except for really two times in history, have been relatively slow kind of movement. They'll raise them or, you know, lower them slowly. But the last two times, you know, when Volcker, he raised them. He lowered them too fast, but he raised them fast. It worked out. This time they raised them, you know, real fast, and it worked out. Is this something that we could see, you know, rapid inclines, rapid declines, even getting in negative? Or do you think that this is just an anomaly, kind of, you know, like back when Volcker was in? Or will we have these rapid inclines and declines going forward?
Yeah, I think the speed at which they hiked is a bit of an anomaly, just because they kind of realized midway through that, oh, we made a mistake, inflation's stickier than we thought, we really need to combat this. But the decline part is actually relatively common. So the heuristic that people use when talking about the Fed is they take the stairs up and then they take the window down. So you always see these nice stair steps. If you were to look at a graph of interest rate hikes, you know, we're going to hike 25 basis points at each meeting. It's a very like regimented stair, like, but when they cut, you know, they might cut 100 basis points at a time. So you see this nice stair step up and then a pretty sharp drop off, because when the Fed is cutting rates, it's typically to reignite growth in the economy, either because we're in a recession or likely to head into a recession.
Yeah. And like you allude to on that, and the historians, you can just kind of look back and see when we're in a recession, how fast they cut those rates. So, you know, what impacts do the current interest rates have on different sectors of the economy, you know, housing, investment, consumer spending? But specifically, you mentioned before where we had these low interest rate environments, you couldn't put your money away in CDs and really keep up with inflation or you know, anything. It was just interest rates were so low, but interest rates are high now. So how is that current, how is it affecting different sectors? And then at the end of this, if you wouldn't mind touching, we've seen Bitcoin go up to, you know, 70,000. We've seen some of these SPACs, you know, Reddit just came out, IPO'd, DWAC, which is Trump's, we've seen it, you know, spike recently. So you would think that with these interest rates being high, that this wouldn't happen. Now, it doesn't seem to be happening to the level it was in 2021, when you had more IPOs in history than ever. But what is, you know, what's allowing these investors to have this, is it the cash sitting on side? And, you know, in other words, why are we still seeing an uptick when interest rates are at a peak here? They haven't even been lowered.
Sure. And the best way to think about where we are today is to go back just a couple years in 2022. Very ugly year for investors, because the Fed started their hiking cycle in March of 2022. And that what happened was it equities drew down, and fixed income drew down at the exact same time. So that's what we call an inflation shock that hit both pieces of your portfolio at the same time and led to some of the worst returns for 60-40 portfolios on record. So that gave a lot of investors some PTSD, just seeing how what they thought was the risk-free piece of their portfolio in fixed income, how can that draw down at the same time? They're supposed to be negatively correlated, right? That's what we were taught in all of our schooling, was negatively when equities draw down, your fixed income's there to balance it out. But we had a pretty unique shock in 2022. So where we are now is the peak of the hiking cycle. When you look at the 10-year treasury, which is a really common point in economics to kind of gauge interest rate levels, you know, think of mortgages are really priced off the 10-year. It's in the middle of the curve, a good point. That peaked at 5% in October of last year. And between October and year end, the yield on the 10-year dropped 1%. So from 5% down to 4%. And returns on fixed income were up 9% in that 2-month period. So that shows the power of a declining rate environment that they can have on fixed income investments. So as we come into 2024 on the heel of that surge late, we're getting a lot of positive economic data on the growth front. You know, fourth quarter GDP grew faster than expected. The Fed has come out and has increased their expectations for growth heading into 2024. So we're in kind of a unique position where investors were really optimistic coming out of last year, so optimistic that they thought the Fed was going to cut rates six times in 2024. And Powell, to your point earlier about moving markets with his speech, they try and do as much as they can to kind of help forecast for the markets. They publish their expectations, and he came out and said, look, guys, we're not going to cut rates as fast and as frequently as you're expecting. And that has actually led to a short-term spike in interest rates so far this year. So fixed income has still been kind of hanging around flat, waiting for the Fed to cut rates, which they've pushed back to about the second half of the year. So how it's impacting markets, you know, fixed income at the peak of the hiking cycle, your starting yields are higher. So that's the good news. The best predictor of a fixed income return is starting yield. So we're about 5.5%. If you hold your bond to maturity, you get that yield, and that can be a reasonable expectation for a return. So at the peak of the market, fixed income becomes more attractive. While it's rising, that's the pain point. But at the top and during any decline, that's when fixed income offers a lot more relative value, because you got higher starting yields and you can get some price appreciation from the declining market. The equity market's the one that's a little bit more nuanced here. Yeah, it's typically when rates are increasing, the equity market should be slowing down here. You know, consumer confidence, as measured by the Michigan surveys that they do, that is not as high as one would expect. But there is still this kind of speculative feel about what's been happening in equity markets. I mean, the S&P 500's up almost 10% through March. We'd be on pace for a 40% annualized return. So part of it's just a little bit of a sugar high coming off of better than expected 2023. And the other part is just the market just salivating at the mouth for the Fed to start cutting rates, because as we talked about earlier, lower interest rate environments, lower borrowing costs, it fuels growth and it fuels investment in those risk assets like equities. So as the market continues to anticipate that the Fed will cut rates, they're pricing in some of that expectation today, which has allowed them to buoy equity markets a little bit stronger than what would normally occur under this scenario.
Yeah. And just to kind of explain that 10-year treasury that you did a great job, but the 10-year treasury is really what, for the viewers, is really what everything's based off of when you think of interest rates and when you're getting those short-term rates. And so when the federal government or the Powell does not, the Federal Reserve does not have to necessarily lower rates, they can just talk about it and that treasury moves. And that's what really affects, you know, CDs, everything else. A lot of the reasons why too, because there's so much uncertainty on where the rates will go. It's why you can't go and get a, you know, 24-month or 18-month CD at 5%. You can only get a 8-month or 6-month or 10-month, you know, CD at that 5%, because the banks that are offering these are unsure of where rates will be 18 months out from now.
Well, some really great insight so far from Matt Hyman. As you can see, there's a lot to get into, and he's well-versed in what's happening in the current state of the economy and with investing. So what we want to do is break this up into two parts. We've had a great conversation up front, but we'll have more to come. So subscribe wherever you watch or listen, and we'll be back with part two with Matt coming soon.
Securities and advisory services offered through Creative One Securities, LLC, member FINRA/SIPC, a registered investment advisor. CLC Financial Services, LLC, and Creative One Securities, LLC are not affiliated. Medicare products are not offered through Creative One Securities, LLC. They may be purchased through a licensed insurance professional. We are an independent financial services firm helping individuals create retirement strategies using a variety of investment and insurance products to custom suit their needs and objectives. This material has been prepared for informational and educational purposes only. It is not intended to provide and should not be relied upon for accounting, legal, tax, or investment advice. Investing involves risk, including the loss of principal. Insurance and annuity products are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying ability of the issuing insurance company. We are not affiliated with any government agency. Diversification does not ensure a profit or guarantee against losses.